I'm here outside Newtown Butler, and I'm talking to William Little. William, what is the name of the locality here?
Well, the townland is Killyroo. It's Newtown Butler electoral division. Newtown Butler, small village in South Fermanagh.
And the house you're living in here, was this always part of the your ancestors' home or your family, your father?
This was part of the family farm. My father moved here in 1947, bought the farm in 1947, and the family lived in the house just up the lane. And when I came back to Fermanagh in 1988, I built this bungalow.
Okay, now you were born in the 1940s.
About 1946.
So, growing up here, what was it like?
Normal country childhood. Everybody was the same. We were one of the few Protestant families in the area, and nobody made any difference one with the other. All the neighbours rallied round and worked with my father, and my father worked with them, and we played with all the local children, and the local young people, when they were old enough, they came to work on the farm with my father. Some of the local girls were sent to help my mother, and they learned to bake and make jam and do all that sort of thing. And we all got on very well together, walked this road to school together, and obviously we knew it was Catholic and Protestant, but by and large we were good neighbours.
Mm-hmm. And everybody was minding their own business and getting on with their own lives. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what happened? Why did it all go wrong?
Well, I suppose that it all started with, I suppose, the IRA campaign in 1957. I remember that as a young person. There were attacks on police stations and patrols on the road, B specials, but it didn't really affect us that much, and it didn't really affect community relations. And then it seemed to, in the late 60s, it seemed to start in Belfast, and then gradually permeated out into the country, and just became polarised, and feelings seemed to harden. And I think as education improved and people became more aware of things happening in the media and so on, brought a lot of attention on what was happening elsewhere to the country.
And so how were you caught up in this in any way? Were you affected?
Not really, because I left home and went to college when I was 18. And all the people that I had known and grown up with, as far as I was concerned, were the same as they always were.
Mm.
And although I was back and forward weekends and to see my parents.
Were you worried about your parents?
Not particularly, because my father was a fairly level-headed character. He'd got on very well with everybody round about, and he was well thought of and well respected, and he respected everybody else, and that's the way we were brought up.
And then you had a lot of shootings, a lot of bombings in your local village,
yes,
Newtown Butler.
And as a result of that, the Protestant population basically retreated into themselves, pulled back completely from most interaction with their Catholic neighbours, and for two reasons. And I know some of them were involved in the security forces part-time, so obviously they didn't want to draw attention to themselves and be targeted, and which was obviously was happening. And the other reason was that anybody that wasn't involved in the security forces didn't want to be accused of carrying information, and if they were associating with their Catholic neighbours and information was passed, they could well be targeted. And I know that was my father's reasoning for pulling back from interaction with some of his Catholic neighbours.
Yeah.
If he wasn't there, he didn't know anything, and he couldn't be accused of telling anything, or and he didn't want to be.
But that was intimidation, wasn't it? Do you know, you're going around with your head down.
Very much so. Anybody that did put their head above the parapet very often paid the price for it. And then, of course, the thing became more organised. It wasn't really the locals. They were being intimidated. They were being pressurised. They were being indoctrinated. And I suppose there was a sense of bravado, and it was a big thing to do as well. You know, I am a big fella now. And the other thing I think I would say is propaganda. There was a big propaganda against the Protestant population. The Protestant population were seen as the lords and masters, the browbeating the Catholic population, keeping them down, not giving them jobs, not giving them houses, and you know, all that stuff well documented. True in some cases, but not to the extent that it was portrayed.
I see.
Locally here, which was basically a very poor rural area, and everybody was in the same boat. But I know from the Protestant point of view round here, there would have been none of that sort of keeping people down. In fact, it was the opposite. I know in our own case here, my father would have gone out of his way to help families.
Imagine, yeah.
And I very often resented the fact that some of these young fellows were working on the farm and getting maybe 10 shillings a day, and I was working and doing the same thing and not getting anything. But that's...
What did you go on to do, really, by yourself?
I went on and I became a school teacher.
Oh, did you? And where did you teach?
I taught in a place called Carnmoney, South Antrim, near Dungormley, outside Belfast. And then eventually I came back here in 1988 to be the principal of the local primary school for 10 years.
So did you meet with any incident, say, in your school in Belfast when you were there, or in Antrim, I mean?
Not really. It was a mixed area, very much mixed area, on the fringes of Loyalist Rathcoole Estate. So we had always had that in the background. He had a nationalist Bonmore estate on the fringes as well. But as far as I was concerned, in the area that I lived and worked in, yes, you were aware of what was going on round about you.
Yeah.
But, and you were aware of the odd incident. But by and large, no great problems, and there was fairly good relations between the local maintained school, St Mary's on the Hill, and our own. And in the days when we used to supervise the 11 plus, teachers from St Mary's would come to our school and we'd go there. And as I say, it was a mixed area. And
was it quite normal teaching away, and you know, all of this, the troubles going on, and you know, did it become normal?
It became normal. One or two, maybe 1974, the Ulster workers' strike, where the roads were blocked and electricity was cut off and so on. But by and large,
yeah. Everything just...
Everything just...
Went on.
Went on as normal.
When did you get married to Hazel?
In 1994. So I was a... My first wife died in 1986. She died from cancer in 1986.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And then it was after that that I... she died in 86. My father died here in 87, and my mother was on her own. The job came up in the school, and I moved back. So then that's really when I got a sort of a rude awakening back to the realities of what was going on. In,
because it was much worse down here at that time.
It was much worse down here at that time. And I suppose it was a shock to the system, because it wasn't the same atmosphere that I had left when I lived here. Either from the Protestant point of view or from the nationalist point of view, the attitudes had completely hardened. Totally different attitude.
Into their separate ways.
And
that did you do anything about that?
Very hard to do anything about that.
I know, but you did get involved.
I got involved.
In what way?
Well, obviously there was a certain amount of interaction between the schools. The swimming programme, for example, they travelled on the same bus and so on. And... One or two initiatives like that. We tried to have a bit of cross community work at Christmas. Met with, I suppose, some success, but not really.
Was it hard to try and bring people on board?
It was hard to try and bring people on board. There were some people who would have been keen enough.
Mm.
But then, again, I suppose it was a sort of intimidation.
Yeah.
Somebody else said, no, you shouldn't be doing that. Or
told them, stay away.
Stay away. Don't get involved. But we persevered, and we're probably fairly fortunate in that the principal of St Mary's, which is the Catholic school in Newton Butler, had a similar background to myself, because he was originally from Derry Lynn, which is sort of
just up the road.
He had left home and he had taught in a Catholic school in White Abbey, which was about 5 miles from where I taught in Carnmoney.
Okay.
So he had taught in a similar sort of situation. And he came to St Mary's in the April, and I came in the September to the control school.
What was it called?
St Mary's.
That was St Mary's, and the school you were principal of?
It was Newton Butler Control Primary.
Control?
Yeah, but that was a state school.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Yeah.
The Catholic schools were called maintained schools.
Yeah.
And the state schools, controlled schools. So, and I think he faced a sort of similar problems and opposition to...
Did you get on pretty well?
Oh, together? We got on very well together.
Yeah. And you both tried to bring, you know, to do things together and mix the children and played games with them and that, did you?
Well, it wasn't an awful lot, but, you know, you were meeting maybe 3 or 4 times a year and doing something. And you also did a program across border, cross-community program with a school in... Gavin, where we did a music thing, Opera in Northern Ireland sponsored it and sent tutors down to, and we went for a couple of days to Milltown, and Milton came to Newton Butler, which was, as I say, cross-border and cross-community. And I think that was quite enlightening, particularly for the cross-border.
I see.
Because they had been...
That was the first time something like that had happened, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's something,
yeah.
And was there a lot of tension, a lot of kind of... it just went off normally.
It just went off normally. It would have maybe been a ripple or two, but... and you always had a couple of families that didn't really want to do anything like that. But then the children would have been happy enough to do it.
Yeah.
But it was parents.
Imagine, yeah.
Yeah. But by and large, there were no great...
And did you, at that time, were you living in Newtown Butler, or were you living here?
I was living here.
With your parents?
Yeah, with my mother, yeah.
Oh, your mother, of course. And your... first wife passed away, and at that stage, had you met Hazel, or...?
Well, no, I didn't meet Hazel until about 1990.
Okay. And she had her own cross to bear as well.
Very much so.
What were those circumstances? What happened there?
Her husband was a policeman. He also farmed. And he was out on the tractor one day with his, what Gary was, I think, 13, his son, and two gunmen jumped out of the hedge and just shot him in front of Gary on the tractor.
My goodness.
Her 13-year-old son.
And that was, of course, a dreadful thing to happen, because the person who suffered was...
Oh, very much so. But you see, that, again, was part of the campaign.
What was his name, the man that...
John McVitie.
McVitie, yeah.
Oh, that's a well-documented story. But it was a case of... It was ethnic cleansing. It was to try and he was murdered. He was a member of the security forces, so that was one reason. The other reason was they thought that the farm then would be up for sale, and And people would move away. But that didn't happen. Gary now still runs the farm, still farms.
What age was her son at that?
I think he was 13.
Imagine. And to experience such a thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it obviously has an effect.
To this day, it was.
Probably still does. You know, special occasions, it obviously does. You know, when the family were getting married and grandchildren and so on like that, that all comes back. It's probably peculiar, maybe coincidence or what, but he was actually shot on the day of my wife's funeral.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah, that was the news that greeted all the folk from around here when they came back from her funeral. All the activity on the road and patrols and so on. So I have had and obviously that has had an effect on my life, coming into a whole family.
Of course it does.
That.
Yeah.
But then I was involved in the Loyal Orders as well, or got involved more when I came back to Fermanagh, in the Orange Institution and the Black.
And then Can you explain that to me?
Well, the Orange Order.
No, I know the Orange Order, yeah, but... And the Black...
The Black Institution is a sort of another level of the Orange Institution.
And why did you join?
Well, I had joined before in the 60s. It was the thing for most Protestant young people to do. It was another social outlet, and it was a part of a way of life and part of culture and part of heritage. And whilst I'd been a member for all those years when I was living away from Newton Butler, wasn't terribly active, but was still part of the system.
And did that give you an opportunity to speak out or to make suggestions or?
Yes. Not always what some people wanted to hear, but...
What were you saying?
Well, really there was no need to say too much until 1996, when Newton Butler became the centre of organised protest by Sinn Féin IRA. It was the same as Gervachy Road or Ormor Road, where they put in an activist to create problems and tension. And that's well documented fact. It's not my spit on it. And the parade, the return parade on the 12th of July, which was normally quite a low-key festive occasion, was blocked on the main street in Newton Butler. Again, organised, and that really caused a lot of community tension, and it's still bubbling away to this day. Thankfully, through various efforts, it has fizzled out and calmed down. But there are still people who want to keep the thing going on. And I would say that there are people in the Protestant population who wouldn't be doing anything to help the situation.
Yeah.
Let's put it like that. Mm-hmm. When I say speak out, a lot of the protests, and then, when the situation was created, the people that created it then said they wanted to resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, all of their resolution was stop everything. And you got comments like not a Protestant foot on the street and all of that. Obviously then
that got people boiling.
And there was sort of a political game played back and forward, writing and asking for meetings and writing and asking for this and that.
Mm.
And no, we're not going to do that. I kept saying, look, answer the letter. You know.
Of course.
Of course that. You're only making a rod for your own back. Proved right. They had a drum cree then came up on one of the church parades. Persuaded the band to stand in the middle of the street and play for an extra 20 minutes or something. I was elsewhere, I didn't know that had been organised. And when I paraded back down to the Orange Hall and discovered this was happening, I asked what was happening. When I was told, I took my collar right off and walked away. I said that they were doing the wrong thing there. It has been cast up at them ever since, you know. So
you were successful in that, were you?
I made my point.
Yeah.
And I proved my point.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people now appreciate it. That there was another way of doing things.
Yeah.
But having said that, some of the actions the Protestant population through the Orange Institution and the parading institutions took weren't seen. Or weren't taken in the spirit in which they were intended.
Of course, yeah.
And there's a whole story behind the Parades Commission. And
what is it?
Well, you've never heard of the Parades Commission.
Well, I told you that I'm a complete outsider, so I'd love to know.
To settle all the parading disputes across Northern Ireland, the Parades Commission, a body was set up by the Northern Ireland office, not elected, but supposedly people who were sensible and had influence and could mediate in disputes. It was set up to mediate in all parades, not just loyalists, but even vintage parades and carnivals and anything that walked the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the big thing was the 12th of July parades and church parades associated with them. And that.
So this commission, is it still going?
It's still going.
Yeah. And does it work? Does it control the different events?
That's a matter of opinion. It probably does now better than it did, because it only rules on contentious parades. And to make a parade contentious, all somebody has to do is to fill in a form objecting to the parade and send it into the Parades Commission.
So were you part of that commission, or were you?
No. I was on the receiving end of that commission because I would have been involved in organising
your own
marches and parades.
So, and you were doing that here, were you?
I was doing that Newtown here, Butler? Yeah.
And those parades that you were organising, were they 12th of July parades, or
they were, traditionally they were a church parade, which was a parade of a band and anything up to 100 Orange Men to a church service on the Sunday before the 12th of July each year, and that walked from the Orange Hall to the church and from the church back to the Orange Hall.
Okay, and that tradition has been going on since for years and years. So, but and it's important to you. It's important to the people who participate in that march.
Yes,
and dress up for it.
Yeah,
and play music.
Yeah,
it's your custom.
It's custom. It has always happened. And as far as the locals were concerned, it was a spectacle for them, which everybody came out to see, and including the parish priest, whose house was at one stage very close to the Orange Hall.
It's commemorating the battle.
It's part of commemorating the Battle of the Boyne and part of the Glorious Revolution, which was really a European war, not. And that's what I have always said, that the commemoration of the Battle of Newton Butler, which was part of the whole leading up to the Battle of the Boyne.
Why should people get so hot-headed about it, and so?
Well, people can get hot-headed if they're stirred up to about anything. If you feel strongly about one thing and somebody else feels strongly against it, you're going to have a clash.
But that was never your intention, I suppose, in the band, in causing any kind of friction at all.
No. But having said that, it was the way it was viewed and the way it was perceived, and a lot of it was in perception, and a lot of it was in organised protest and objection.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, the answer there is you're a proud Ulster man, Ulster Scotch man, or would you say you're Irish? I mean, is this something?
Well, I'm an Ulster man.
It's just like I'm a Munster man, but I'm an Irish man.
I'm a British citizen, but I could be a nationalist, but I couldn't be a Republican.
Oh no, there's a definite divide there.
Um, And maybe that's where I differ from some people.
Do you see any walls being broken down? Can you see this coming to some kind of where people can actually get on with their lives?
I think they probably can, but I think there's always going to be people in the background who always have an agenda, who are never going to let it lie. And I think the unfortunate thing is that a lot of young people, and particularly young, well-educated people, are being indoctrinated, and they're going to carry on, maybe not active terrorists, but at least they're going to keep on the same mentality, and that's where I think a lot of this has come from. You know, people are still harping back to 1921, to independence, and
but that's history, and surely we can learn from history. Yeah, but go forward.
But I think a lot of people haven't learned from history. I mean, you could probably write a book on it, but.
But I suppose in many ways, William, you were, you witnessed an awful lot of terror during the last 30 years of violence.
Yes. And would have known an awful lot of people that have suffered mentally, physically, socially.
Well, you have it every day.
And I think that's the big problem with this particular area. The social aspect has been really horrendous. And it'll take a long, long time to try and bring that back to normality. There's a lot of suspicion. There's a lot of mistrust still in the community.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to keep fighting to try and keep it.
Do your best to try and keep things on an even keel, and to promote good relations for wherever it's possible. And it's not easy. And it hasn't been easy. And maybe the thing that I feel sometimes is that it's a bit like the red Indian and the white man. People talk with a forked tongue. You know, they'll say one thing to your face when
they mean something.
It means something behind your back.
And you think that's the way it is?
That's it has been for a long time. And I'm not saying that that's one-sided.
No, it's important though that you you are given a chance to voice your opinion and to say what you feel. And once it's what you hear is what it is.
Well, that's true. But you know, you don't always hear what is true. You keep plodding on, and you try to get across a bit of common sense and a bit of live and let live, and talk to all and sundry and try and point people in the right direction. But at the same time, you don't expect people to give up their beliefs and their way of life and their customs and so on just to please somebody else.
Of course. Yeah. I quite understand. Yeah, I
do.
I think that you've been living with a cross all your life, or with, since your marriage to Hazel, because she has suffered so much. I'd love to talk to Hazel at some stage.
Right, we'll talk to her.
But William Little, thank you for inviting me into your home and telling me your story. I appreciate that very much indeed. Thank you.
Not at all.
Thank you.